The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to NBC Sports Philadelphia. The guests you want to hear from. The Phillies information you need. It's At The Yard with Jim Salisbury.
Welcome back to At The Yard, presented by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. If it's your heart, demand Deborah. Also, be sure to subscribe to At The Yard, wherever you listen to podcasts. And the Fightin' Phils are off to a really good start here, 14-7. And today we're going a little different on you at the Yard, bringing in my NBC Sports Philadelphia teammate, Corey Seidman. And we're just kind of, you know, 3 weeks into the season. Thought it was a nice little time for a little checkpoint on where the Phillies are. They're a nice surprise. They're a nice story. I heard once long ago that winning beats the heck out of losing. And we're seeing a lot of winning. And I think there's one reason why. And that comes down to what happens on that little bump 60 feet, 6 inches from home plate. Corey, your impressions?
You know, 2 years ago, the Phillies' rotation was really good in April, but that rotation wasn't built to last. This one seems like it is built to last. You have, you know, two ace types at the top of your rotation in Arrieta and Nola, but really it's been Pivetta and Velasquez, I think, that have been the X factors here in the early going, missing as many bats as they always have, but they've been more consistent, especially with control. And with those two, what really sticks out to me in terms of dominance is the first time they're going through a batting order, they've combined for 29 strikeouts so far this season and no walks. So that, to me, shows that they're ready to go at first pitch, and they've been able to sustain it into the middle of games as well.
The no walks just jumps right out at you. In fact, this whole staff, starting staff, number two in the National League with just 30 walks. That is, that's big time. That's you got to have that. And I agree with you on Pivetta and Vinny Velasquez. We all kind of know what Arrieta and Nola can do. This team was, you know, but a rotation has to go five deep. There's plenty of teams out there with, you know, one and two good ones, and it doesn't sustain. They need something below those guys to support those top two guys, and I think Pivetta actually eventually can be a top-level pitcher in this league. I've kind of drawn the parallel in the past to what the Eagles did with Carson Wentz. You know, 2 years ago they threw him out there and let him learn on the job, and he gained all kinds of valuable experiences with the ups and downs that come with playing at the highest level of your sport. And I think that experience benefited him. We saw what it did for him in year two. The Phillies, they pushed Pivetta to the big leagues last year. He was here because of injury. He was here because of need. He was here before he really, I think, belonged here. He wasn't quite ready. I saw, you know, I didn't see, you know, composure that was ready and control that was ready. But 26 starts, some good ones, many that he took it on the chin, had an ERA over 6. He looks like he's got the aptitude for pitching and the talent and the maturity. I've seen some maturity to learn from that experience. And I think right now it's only been 5 or 6 starts. That does not make that does not mean you've arrived. But we're seeing the power, we're seeing the more confident breaking ball, we're seeing throwing pitches with conviction, and that all comes from confidence. I think a lot of that stemmed from just the learning experience that he had last year.
Yeah, he was also working against some change-ups, which he didn't do much of last season. The question now just becomes sustainability. Do we expect that Nick Pivetta is going to be able to do this over 30 starts, or is this kind of him benefiting from what's been a pretty easy early season schedule for the Phillies? I mean, they've had series here against the Marlins and Reds, who have the two lowest batting averages in the NL. They faced the Rays when the Rays were really at their lowest point. So I think that's why this 3-4 week stretch coming up here, where you have teams like the Diamondbacks and the Braves and the Nationals, that's really going to show us where these starting pitchers are earlier in their career.
I agree with you. The early schedule, hey, you know, you only can play the team on your schedule that night. So I don't fault them for beating up on bad teams, but that's what you got to do. You got to beat them. You got to take care of them. And last year, the Phillies were a bad team. So now they're beating up on the bad teams. To me, that's progress. I think playing some of these lesser teams has had a nice byproduct in that not only it's allowed the Phillies to build some confidence and learn to win a little bit, and that's all good stuff. And you make a good point about the younger pitchers, Pivetta and Vinny Velasquez, whether it's sustainable. They're still going to have their ups and downs. All young pitchers do. Hey, pitchers that have arrived do. But you still can learn a lot from the downs, and you can build a lot of confidence with the ups. But let's, 14-7, 13-3 since that 1-4 start. I have no other word for that but impressive.
Since Gabe Kapler was booed mercilessly at the opening series at Citizens Bank Park, the Phillies have done nothing but win.
Nothing but win. And his players have played good for him. And I think he's backed off in some areas, taking his foot off the gas. I think those first five games were a good, learning experience for him.
So let me ask you then. He was heavily criticized for pulling Aaron Nola on opening day. You look at it now, the Phillies starters are routinely going 6-plus innings.
Yep.
In a way, was that almost a positive, a blessing in disguise, Gabe Kapler kind of making this controversial decision that he paid for, and now it seems like he's adjusted?
I think, though, he would have adjusted anyway when he saw how good these guys were throwing. But I do think game one was a case of overmanaging. I think he's a really bright guy, a really sharp guy. I think he's got a lot of very sound ideas. I just think he was in too much of a hurry to show it all in 1 week, to show how smart he was all in 1 week, how different he was all in 1 week. And sometimes, you just let it happen. Let it happen. And that's the way baseball is. This is not a bang your head against the locker game like football, where you can go out in an explosive burst and over 16 Sundays. No, this is every day. Sometimes you got to ease in. And I think he's taken his foot off the gas pedal, and it's benefited him. And I think his players are playing better for him. Did he have some learning experiences in the first five games? Sure he did. I think taking out Nola, probably was a learning experience. He probably realized this is a guy I can trust. And Nola's done nothing but, support that in his subsequent starts. But check out some of these numbers that I kind of carved up this morning over my cup of coffee. They're even okay numbers for me, and I'm not a big numbers guy.
What you got?
So we got, 13-3 since he was booed, right? In the last 96 games, 51-45. That is a significant slice of baseball. Not really a small sample size. Pretty good. This sort of emergence or improvement started under Pete McCannon, and it's continued. But I just think it's so pitching-based.
It is, but at the same time, so that's a 96-game sample. I'm pretty sure Rhys Hoskins is at 71 games.
He is at 71 games. He leads the majors in RBIs over that span. And he's fifth in home runs. He's fourth in times on base. He's in the top 10 across the board. We're watching something really special here. But I still think pitching has kind of ruled the day here in the early season. And just take a look at some of these numbers. As we head into this series against Arizona, which is a tougher test, they can hit. Here we are. The team is 14-7. And so after 21 games, 3 weeks of baseball, number one in the National League in ERA, they've walked the second fewest batters. They're in the top 10 in strikeouts. They're third in opponents' OPS. They are tied with the Dodgers with 11 quality starts. They are third in the National League in first pitch strikes. Love that, right? They are number one in the National League in pitches per inning. So they're throwing under 16 pitches per inning. I believe you call that efficiency.
Yes, sir.
Which they are stressing. And their whip, they have a top 10 whip. I've always been a firm believer, it all starts with pitching. And boy, this pitching has done a really nice job. Also, they're averaging 5.5 runs per game. A little artificial because of the 20-run game they had, but their run differential, number one in the National League at 33. Plus 33, not bad.
Yeah, so I think the most impressive part so far is that the Phillies, despite, you mentioned that the run total is artificial based on the 20-run game.
Not hugely, but a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So, if they scored 8 runs in that game, that number would be well lower.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the Phillies have twice as many wins as losses with the offense really not performing to full capability just shows how much they've been reliant on the pitching. The stat that really jumps out to me with what you just went through was the pitches per inning. Because last season, Nick Pivetta threw the most pitches per inning of any pitcher in baseball.
Like 20, over 20.
It was right around there. And then Vince Velasquez was in the top 10 in the NL in terms of most pitches per inning as well. And he, it seems like start by start, we would talk about pitch efficiency. We would talk about pitch economy, getting deeper into games. So far, you know, early season four or five starts, he's been able to do that. And then you couple that with Aaron Nola seeming to reach an even higher level this season than he did last season. And Jake Arrieta so far has been as advertised. I know we were a little concerned early in the year with the swings and misses, but he had 14 in his last start.
The last start, he had that Greg Maddux sinker, where he's throwing it right at the hip bone, and it's coming right back over the plate to a lefty. Except Greg Maddux threw it at 86, and he's throwing it at 91, 92. It was one of the best sinkers I've ever seen in this single game. Aaron Nola, the movement he gets at the bottom of the strike zone, the changeup that he committed himself to two winters ago has become a real good pitch. You know, Sunday against the his last start against Pittsburgh, he pitched great. He went hard against Sean Rodriguez early and hit one off the scoreboard. The rest of the day, he just soft on Sean Rodriguez, really frustrated him. And then, but what really impressed me is in the seventh inning, and from upstairs, I thought he was running out of gas. They were getting better swings at him, squaring some stuff up. He disagreed with me after the game. I asked him if he was running out of gas, and that's fine. He's a competitor. I don't expect him to say anything different. But he just impressed me. I think it was Jordy Mercer. Giving him a tough at-bat, following off some pitches as a runner on base, it's a close game, and he went change-up, swing, swing, gone. I mean, just, this kid, he's so soft-spoken, but, I mean, it belies his toughness. He competes, and he's such a smart pitcher, and the way he can make that ball move two ways, you know, he's not even 25 years old yet. People forget. You know, Rhys Hoskins is older than him. Aaron Nola seems like he's been around forever. But I think the best is yet to come.
So I've said this. I'm curious if you agree with this or not. In Nola, with him focusing more on the changeup, with him having that two-seam fastball that's one of the very best in baseball in terms of movement, kind of reminds me of Cole Hamels around 2011, where the first handful of years of his career, it was fastball changeup. He had a curveball that he would show you every once in a while, but it wasn't really an effective pitch. Then he focused on improving that pitch, and he added a cutter after Roy Halladay got here. And it kind of unlocked even more potential, and he became like a four-pitch monster with that different
cutter
mix.
Cutter was the big pitch that he added, and it got right-handers off his fastball because all of a sudden, you know, he's popping that on your fingernails. It hurts. Another pitch to respect. Anytime you can polish up your repertoire and go deeper and have more pitches, it's going to help you. Some guys, it kind of confuses them. And their pitch repertoires get too big. All of a sudden, the pitching coach wants to scale it back. Aaron Nola is so smart, has such an aptitude for pitching. He can come at you with all those pitches. And like I said, you know, I actually mentioned the other day, I think him and Hoskins could end up in the All-Star game. Wouldn't surprise me. They might have more guys. But I wanted one-run victories. Last year, they were 15 under 500. This year, they're winning, you know, a handful of one-run games early. I think that gets back to pitching as well, keeping you in the ball game. And the fact that, yeah, they haven't, you know, put together a consistent string of offense, but when you're in the ballgame, it only takes one big hit. One of my favorite wins was the other night in Atlanta. It was when it's tied in the ninth inning, and Scott Kingery leads off with a four-pitch walk, steals second. Just a gutsy, you know, they had good times on the catcher. They had good times on the pickoff move, and he executes that stolen base. Cesar gets the bunt down, and they end up winning the ballgame. I think that's another area where pitching can do for you. Just keep you in the game long enough. It's almost like seeing a lot of pitches. You see a lot of pitches, at some point that pitcher's going to make a mistake, boom. Keep you in the ballgame long enough, and you're going to get one chance to win the ballgame. We've seen that a few nights.
Yeah, the pitching obviously has a huge impact on that. I think the fact that they've gotten more than they expected out of these middle relievers, guys like Arano and Eduardo Ramos, that's played a large role in keeping games close in the sixth or seventh inning if the starter leaves early. You mentioned Kingery leading off with the walk and the stolen base. They're also more athletic this year, so they have different ways to win games.
Great point there. On that inning, I mean, Kingery steals second. Cesar lays down a bunt, beats it out. Two athletic plays.
And you know, one of the games that sticks out to me, it wasn't even a one-run win, but it could have been. They were up 2-1 on the Reds. Kingery comes and hits the grand slam to break it open, make it 6-1. To me, that's kind of almost like a hidden impact there. Yeah, they win 6-1. It looks like an easy win in the box score. That's the kind of game where so many times over the years we've seen the Phillies lose the lead in the ninth inning. The Reds tie at 2-2 or maybe go up 3-2. This time, it's not even a question because they're able to blow it open because they have a deeper lineup.
Put it away. Take some pressure off that bullpen. You might be able to sit a guy. That one of your big guys in the bullpen that you were thinking of using the eighth or ninth, now you can sit him, you got him for the next night. You mentioned that Cincinnati series. I thought that was a big series for the Phillies and a big series for Kapler because they used a number, they shift all the time defensively, but they used a number of them on Joey Votto and they took three hits out of his bat rack. Now he got one back the last night, he kind of snaked one through shortstop, but you know, I thought that was big in. Maybe even telling the players that, hey, these things, you know, will work if you give them time. And I think it was big with the fans winning some confidence in Kapler.
Yeah.
And I've been impressed with their defensive shifts. I mean, that one on Odubel down at Tampa the other night was amazing. They really pour a lot of time into how they're going to position these guys. Sometimes it's going to blow up in your face. It's just not going to work. But other times, there's a lot of reasoning behind it. And Tampa and Cincinnati, it really worked well.
Unfortunately, we're always going to notice when it blows up in their face. We're never going to notice when Joey Votto, you know, other than mentioning it every once in a while, we're not going to talk all the time on a daily basis about Joey Votto hitting into the shift. It's always more noticeable when you miss. And that's why with all the people who have criticized Gabe Kapler's early season shifts, to me, unless you're going to sit there and go through every single time they've shifted and figure out if it's benefited them more times than it's hurt them, then you can't. You can't say that Gabe Kapler's wrong for having them shift this much.
No, it's there's science behind it. And, you know, and it's not the newest thing in the world. Lou Boudreau, the manager of the Indians back in the 40s, used to shift on Ted Williams. But you know, it's a lot more scientific now. Okay, we're going to take a little break now, and I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Corey Seidman as we kind of go over this Phillies 14-7 start. It's been exciting so far. Coming up next at The Yard, we are going to dive into some Twitter questions about the Phillies. Corey and I are going to beat those around a little bit. And that is next after this health tip from Deborah Heart and Lung Center.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is At The Yard, the podcast.
And welcome back, everybody. I'm Jim Salisbury, and I am joined by Corey Seidman today, my teammate from NBC Sports Philadelphia. We are talking about this Phillies 14-7 start, 13-3 in their last 16 games, in the middle of a big 10-game homestand. And just a quick reminder, please subscribe to At The Yard on your favorite podcasting app. And we are going to jump in to some Twitter questions from Phillies fans, try to get as many as we can. And let it fly, Corey.
So the first one comes from Dave Gormley, who wants to know how the Phillies are going to solve the logjam they have in both the infield and the outfield.
I think long range, I could be wrong. I'm a Cesar Hernandez fan. I think he's a good player. I think he helps every night in some way. I also think you have Scott Kingery, whose best position is second base. He's on a 6-year contract. Could be a 9-year contract with the options. I think at some point they look to cash in on Cesar's trade value. I think they have been for the last year plus. I think they have a really high price and nobody's met it. But I think their ears will continue to be open on that. And in the outfield, I think he's going to keep, you know, kind of rolling through four guys. And then eventually a third guy is going to emerge, because I think Hoskins and Odubel are, you know, set.
Yeah, I agree on the outfield. As far as Cesar Hernandez, and I just wonder, will they ever be able to get full value for a player like Cesar Hernandez? Because the things that he does well, right now, it doesn't seem like they're valued league-wide. There's more homers than ever before. We're coming off of that type of season. Cesar, over the last 3 years, is at .294 with a .376 OBP. There's only 10 other guys in baseball who can claim that. And yet still, the Phillies haven't been able to find a suitable trade partner, a suitable fit in return for him. And that's why I just wonder, if you're not going to get 100 cents on the dollar for a player like Cesar Hernandez, who seems to only be getting better, I mean, he's been better on the base paths this season, taking as many pitches as he always has. If you're not ever going to be able to find full value for him, why not just keep him and maybe cut ties with a different player who you might not get as much in return for, but maybe he doesn't have the same skill set that Cesar has?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. I think, you know, Kingery could land at third base at some point. I'm not sure he profiles as a, you know, the prototypical third baseman, but it certainly would work for a while. You know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, Cesar's name has been out there, and you're right. They haven't received anything that has moved them to make a deal, but I believe their price has been very high. I would take a, you know, I think if you could get a solid rotation piece for him, I'd have to think about it at some point. But in the meantime, what about the outfield? How do you think that shakes out?
Well, I just think that, you know, first off, long season injuries always happen. If the Phillies were to say, trade an Aaron Altherr, Nick Williams, and the other player gets hurt, then what are you doing in the outfield? Then you're short a guy. Then maybe you're putting Pedro Florimone out there. You're putting Scott Kingery out there and kind of moving things around. So I do think that, at least for this season, it makes sense to carry those four outfielders, kind of play the platoon game as you can. Aaron Altherr was struggling here in the early going, so Nick Williams got a little more playing time. But if Altherr starts to hit, you know, he could be the guy that kind of takes that role.
And it's good to have the depth. It's going to probably shake out as if at best a platoon, because Hoskins got to play and Odubel's got to play. You know, you got to play them a lot and ride them. I think eventually that's going
to
happen.
And they also have a couple more series where you're going to need to utilize the DH. So, I mean, with more interleague games than ever before, that's a factor as well. Mm-hmm. Next question comes from Brian Hunn, who says, I know it's early, but he wants to know what's most likely to happen at the trade deadline. A, get a bat. B, get a starter. C, stand pat and let things continue.
I don't, you know, if they're in it, I don't see Stan Pat at all. I don't think ownership would go for that. I think, you know, they're going to be looking for pitching. I mean, we spent, you know, the whole first half of this podcast talking about how important it was. I think you keep looking to get pitching.
Right, because as good of things as gone in April, I mean, Nick Pivetta has a 2.57 ERA. Do we really think that when the season ends he's going to be at 2.57? Do we think that Vince Velasquez is going to be where he is? I mean, there's going to be some regression. I think the hope is that when that regression occurs, that the offense is doing its part more. But, yeah, you know, if we're in July and one of those starters is hurt or he's ineffective and that number five spot is still kind of up in the air, I could see that happening,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, as we said a couple times earlier, you know, six good starts does not mean you've arrived. So I would think they would look to be active at the trade deadline and continue to, you know, augment their pitching. And, you know, I think kind of their lineup, you know, there's guys they want to see. They want to see the catcher. They want to see the shortstop. I don't know where you'd add a bat, unless, of course, it's the guy in Baltimore. Now, if he's available, Manny Machado, I think you need to get creative and see how you can pull that off before he hits the market.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Manny Machado, one of the questions, shockingly, is about him. Dave Glantz wants to know, should the Phillies sign Manny Machado as a shortstop in the offseason? I think that to this point, all the talk has been about him potentially playing third base.
Well, that just depends on what your evaluators tell you about J.P. Crawford. I mean, is he your guy long-term? Then, you know, probably not. I guess the question, are you hitching your wagon to J.P. Crawford?
And that's what this season is about.
You know, finding out. And I think the front office would like him to be their shortstop. He's the type of guy they kind of want to build their lineup around. But you could sign Manny Machado really as you... I look at Manny Machado's body, and I see a guy who's going to play at least 40. I do.
Wow.
And I think he's going to go over and become your first baseman someday. So I think there's a couple different spots he could end up playing. You?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if they do go after him, it would be to play a corner infield spot. I think at this point in his career, his best defensive days at shortstop are probably behind him. And, I mean, the Phillies aren't going to give up on J.P. Crawford after a half season, no matter what happens.
And money's going to sell this thing, you know. They got money. And they, if the money is right and they say, Manny, you're going to play third base, he's going to play third base because he wants to get paid. And I also think you can convince him that third base would be good for his career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a little less wear and tear, right?
Yeah.
And he'll play longer. So I don't think that is even going to be an issue. I think money's going to talk. Venue's going to talk. This is a good place to play. Philadelphia, you got a team on the rise. I think they're going to be in it for Manny. I think they're going to be in it for Harper. So we'll see.
You know, let me just ask you about that real quick, piggyback on that. It seems like there's been so much more juice with Machado in this city over the last 18 months or so than there has been with Bryce Harper. They're both somewhat similar hitters in terms of their overall value. Do you see the Phillies being in the running for a guy like Harper? I mean, he might get $400 million, $500 million.
Yeah, I think they're going to be in there running for anybody. Any elite player. They're a big market. They're going to have money to spend. If you're not interested in Bryce Harper, something's wrong, you know, because he's going to help you put a championship team on the field. I think a lot of the connection or the reason for the buzz with Machado is the front office has a lot of history with, you know, they all worked in Baltimore. Now they're here. They drafted him. And there's always been this kind of uncertainty whether Michael Franco was going to develop into the game breaker, the game changer that you hope he would be, or if he's kind of going to just drift off into the background and go somewhere else. So I think the Machado buzz is more, you know, emblematic of a possible need at third base.
Okay, the next question comes about a guy who has not been a part of the Phillies' hot start. Dan May wants to know, is Jared Eichhoff guaranteed a spot in the Phillies' rotation when he comes off the DL after struggling in spring training and with the current Phillies starting five and pitching so well? Curious what your thoughts are on that.
I think it's a great question. I've thought about it. He's out there running sprints right now. We are at the yard on At the Yard.
Yes, we are. At the yard.
So it's a good question because, you know, the guy he's running sprints with, Ben Lively, has been about what you would expect from a number five starter.
Yeah.
You know, kept him in some games. Good competitor. Getting better. I see a bond with Arrieta. I wonder if that can help him a little bit. But I don't know if I have an answer to that.
I think
they're going to be really patient with Jared Eichhoff just because there's not that urgency right now. There's not that glaring hole in the rotation. So you can really take your time, build him up. You can extend his minor league rehab and make sure that when he comes back, not only is he healthy and strong, but maybe hot.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also is obviously determined by how Ben Lively pitches over this next month.
Sure.
It's been interesting in the early going. Lively has more strikeouts than innings pitched, which I don't think anybody would have projected. This is a guy who didn't K anybody really in the minor leagues. Yeah. Last season, 5.3 per nine. My philosophy with number five starters has always been, if they can give you a 4.50 ERA, which means three runs in six innings,
mm-hmm.
that's doing your job.
Yeah.
If you can keep the team in the game one out of every two games, two out of every three, then you're doing your job. You don't need to be an ace. And, you know, between Ben Lively, Zach Eflin, Jared Eichhoff, the Phillies have choices for that number five spot if one of the guys starts to struggle. And I think that's what a lot of these, I mean, Eflin and Lively were guys who were acquired in trades by Ruben Amaro Jr., and I think a lot of these minor trades that Ruben Amaro made at the end of his tenure are starting to show up.
Pivetta. Look at Pivetta for Jonathan Papelbon, a guy that, you know, they were trying to move. They actually ate some salary. Look at Arano.
Arano.
For Roberto. Arano and Jesmel Valentin for Roberto Hernandez. Lively for Marlon Byrd. Still one of the Phillies' best resources is cash. They ate a good chunk of Marlon Byrd to get Lively. They ate a ton on Cole Hamels to get that package. They ate money on Papelbon to get, you know, a guy with pretty good ceiling in Pivetta. So, you're right. I mean, some of these, you know, Kingery, Hoskins, drafted by the Ruben Amaro regime. So it might have appeared that the cupboard was bare. This stuff just might have been in the background. Now it's kind of coming to the forefront. It's getting more mature. It's playing better. And we're seeing, you know, we're seeing it now on the field. We're kind of getting away from what's our next Twitter question?
Next question also deals with pitching from Nikki Slice. Who has the best chance to be an elite-level starter, Nick Pivetta, Vince Velasquez, or Sixto Sanchez, the prospect we've started to hear about over the last year plus?
Well, based on ceiling, you got to say Sixto, but he's a long way away.
Yeah, I would say Sixto just because in terms of the triple-digit stuff, on top of the triple-digit stuff.
The command.
I mean, you rarely see guys with that kind of strikeout-to-walk ratio, with that kind of control at single-A when they're 20 years old. I mean, Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez sure didn't have it. They're still trying to work through those.
Sixto's exciting, you know, to think that they got this kid. You know, the story behind them getting him is pretty remarkable. They were working out a Cuban catcher down in the Dominican. They needed some guys to throw him batting practice. One of their area scouts said, I got this converted shortstop, was kind of learning how to pitch. I'll bring him along and have him throw to this catcher. Bart Braun was down there, the scout. He didn't like the catcher, but he said, who's this kid throwing BP? I like him. Called back to Philly. The kid wanted $35,000 to start. Got him $35,000. They signed Sixto Sanchez. Right place at the right time. You know, I will say, you know, he has a lot of development road to travel. A lot can go right. A lot can go wrong. You just need to take a deep breath and be patient. But the tools are, you know, really, really intriguing. In terms of ceiling, he could be an elite guy. The next guy, I'd say Pivetta, if it continues to come together for him, could be a kind of a difference maker.
Yeah, it's interesting with guys like Six, though, because 15 years ago, a lot of Phillies fans probably wouldn't have even heard of him at this point. You know, so much more about these guys from the day that they become these quote-unquote prospects, that everything they do is magnified. If Sixto goes 3 2/3 innings and has a bad start, people are reacting on Twitter like, oh, God, what's wrong with him?
And it's not a good thing. You know, it's not necessarily a good thing because he's 19 years old. He's going to have bad days. And you can learn a lot from bad days. Sometimes it's good to have a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it's like a 401k. You throw it in there and you just let it work for you. And then, you know, we're going to see, it's like Moniak. Everybody's going nuts about Moniak. He just got out of high school. Give him some time. Well, he doesn't hit home runs. I wouldn't even worry about his power for another couple of years. Square up the ball, try to hit 300, and see where we are in 2 years. All right, we're running out of time here. You want to go one more?
Yeah, let's go one
all right.
more.
So along one more those, question. Who we got?
So along those lines of giving a young player more time, Mike DiSabatino comments that Scott Kingery's errors have increased and his batting average has decreased during this position merry-go-round. Something needs to change. I don't have as much of a sense of urgency as Mike DiSabatino does with this, but I have noticed that I think Kingery is 2-for-19 over his last handful of games. It does look like Major League Pitching is catching up to him a bit here.
There is an adjustment. I'm not overly... The one thing I will say about Kingery, and I've noticed from watching him in this 3 weeks, even more than that, over in spring training, more than I've ever really bared down on before. His swing is long. He does have some length in that swing. It works for him, obviously, but he will throw up some strikeouts at times. And there is an adjustment to the big league pitching. And they all know he has a little bit of a target on his back. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of ink in spring training. Got a big contract. You know, historic contract, really, when you think about it. So, you know, everybody's putting on their Sunday best to try to get Scott Kingery out. I think he's going to be just fine. He's allowed to have ups and downs, and he will as a rookie. I don't think the moving around has hurt him one bit. I think that is totally overrated. This is a kid who's played all over the diamond, not just in 2018, but long before that. Played in the outfield in college, played in the infield in college. He did a little bit in the minor leagues. He is 100% baseball player. I don't see a second baseman, although I think second base is his best position, but... You know, I see a baseball player more than I see one guy who plays one position. I don't think the bouncing around is going to hurt him at all or has hurt him. I just think this is a kind of a natural adjustment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that the positional thing has been overblown. I think that he's looked natural or somewhat natural at almost every spot that he's played, which is pretty impressive. You got to remember, like you said, it's not like this guy played one position all through his pro career and then in his college career before that. He is used to playing multiple positions, and every time he's been asked about it, he's pretty much downplayed it, saying that it doesn't really have an impact. I agree that there is kind of a target on his back because right now, I know it's still, we're not past April yet, but he's been the most impressive rookie in the National League. I mean, he'd be the front runner if, you know, we were looking at awards right now. He would probably be in that conversation for the NL Rookie of the Year. I'm curious to see where that is in a couple months. But
if you're a pitcher and he comes to the plate, oh, this is that kid I read about, the kid that got the big deal. You know, maybe target's not the right word, but you know, he has a little bit of a reputation. You're naturally going to bear down on him.
Mm-hmm.
So people are going to really, you know, kind of ramp up to get Scott Kingery out. More often than not, I think he's going to help you win games. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. That's what's great about this game. There are no sure things. We do all the projections in the world. There are no sure things. And that's one of the things I enjoy about it most is kind of watching it unfold.
And if you watch Scott Kingery on a daily basis, you see a complete skill set. I mean, the guy has speed. He can play defense.
How about that throw he made against Cincinnati?
Yeah. To throw a guy out of the plate? You talking about
yeah,
that?
Yeah. From left field.
Yeah. In what I think was his first start in the bigs in left field, which is just incredibly impressive. I mean, the speed's there. The defense is there. The arm's there. He has gap-to-gap power, and he has shown over the last year plus that he can hit home runs too. So
he's a strong kid. He can hit the ball out of ballpark. And Corey, you've hit the ball out of the ballpark. I want to thank you for stopping by at the Yard. What did you think of your first appearance at the Yard?
You know, first off, I was honored, you know, to follow in Scott Kingery's footsteps. I hope I brought it as much as he did. But, you know, it's every young scribe's dream to be asked to join Jim Salisbury on at the Yard.
On your way out the door, we have some lovely parting gifts for you. Make sure you pick up a couple, and I hope you've got room in your trunk. Anyway, hey, it's been a lot of fun. A reminder, please subscribe to At the Yard on your favorite podcasting app. I've enjoyed my time with Corey Seidman. We'll do it again sometime. Thanks for being with us. Catch you next time at The Yard.
Thanks for listening to At The Yard on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Be sure to subscribe to At The Yard wherever you listen to podcasts.